I think in terms of the spread, one of the reasons why you haven't seen it move, even though there's some very smart people that do like Miami, like if there's a dark horse outside the top five seeds, I would say, because I think the top five, all of them can win the national championship, and I'm not sure that the other seven can.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in. Another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Murray, and it is Wednesday, so that means Wes Reynolds. Wednesdays with Wes will be coming up here momentarily. Just a little programming note with the college football playoff upon us. We will have multiple guests on Thursday's podcast. We will have Matt Eumanns, of course. We will break down the four playoff games, and we will have Brad Powers jump on the program as well. So a little double dip of handicappers on the Thursday show, as we'll get a little bit of a new voice in here to talk about the college football playoff games. And maybe, just maybe, we can get some thoughts on the FCS playoffs that will be happening this weekend, as we have Brawl in the Wild Part 2, Montana, Montana State, and Illinois State taking on Villanova. So looking forward to that tomorrow. That'll be Matt Eumanns and Brad Powers separately. So I'll talk to both of them separately. Also, just programming note here on for the holidays. We talked about it briefly on Monday, but just to kind of give you a feel of the lay of the land, so to speak, we will do a show tomorrow, Thursday the 18th. We will do a show at some point on Tuesday the 23rd. I am heading up to Boise to do the sidelines for the famous Idaho Potato Bowl on Bowl Season Radio. So I won't be doing the Monday show, but that should be in your feed, I would say, late on the 23rd or early Christmas Eve. I mean, what better way to spend your Christmas Eve than with me and Adam Burke? Well, we'll talk about some bowl games, early thoughts on the quarterfinals as well. And then myself, Wes Reynolds, Matt Eumanns, Adam Burke, we will all be back in that week between Christmas and New Year's around the 29th and 30th. We'll have a couple episodes for you there. So a little bit clunky, you know, it's the holiday season, so stick with us. We'll have plenty of content for you and plenty on the quarterfinals on New Year's Eve and New Year's Day. Just a reminder, we're up on YouTube every episode, so please do subscribe on YouTube, youtube.com/collegefootballbettingpodcast, iTunes, Spotify, of course. And if you wouldn't mind, as a Christmas present to your boy, maybe a little five-star rating and a review on iTunes. All right, a little housekeeping here before we get to Wes Reynolds. We have partnered up with Coca-Cola Bowl Season Radio this year. If you're looking for live play-by-play on the radio this holiday season, well, they have the national call of 20 bowl games. All of them will air on SiriusXM, the Varsity app, TuneIn, and terrestrial radio stations nationwide, including Los Angeles, Seattle, Vegas, Orlando, DC, San Francisco, Nashville, Dallas. So check out all you need to know on their Twitter feed at Bowl Season Radio. Their upcoming broadcasts include the Xbox Bowl on Thursday the 18th at 9 p.m. Eastern. That's Missouri State and Arkansas State. That game will be on SiriusXM Channel 84. Friday, a little double dip, Myrtle Beach Bowl, Kennesaw State, Western Michigan, and then Gasparilla Bowl, Memphis, and NC State. Both those games will air on SiriusXM Channel 201 starting at 11 a.m. Monday, the game that I will be a part of on the sidelines there, the famous Idaho Potato Bowl in Boise, Washington State and Utah State, 2 p.m. Eastern kick time. That game will be on SiriusXM 201. And then the Frisco Bowl on Tuesday the 23rd, UNLV and Ohio, that game available on SiriusXM Channel 84. We are also, of course, partnered up with our friends over at Nohoku, as they are the sponsor of our Hawaii Bowl preview, which we will get to with Wes Reynolds. And in case you missed it, our conversation with Timmy Chang last week. It's the holiday season, so Nohoku invites you to share the spirit of aloha with gifts that sparkle with meaning. Nohoku is Hawaii's finest jeweler since 1924. For nearly 100 years, Nohoku has crafted an incomparable collection of Hawaiian and island lifestyle jewelry inspired by the beauty, culture, and traditions of the islands. Nohoku's designs are timeless, making them perfect for the holidays, from treasure keepsakes and meaningful milestones to gifts that capture the warmth and wonder of the season. They have more than 30 locations across Hawaii, as well as here on the mainland. Las Vegas has multiple locations, California, Texas, the DMV where I'm from at Tyson's Corner, King of Prussia outside of Philadelphia, outside the Chicago area, up in New England. They're all over the place. If you want the full listing of locations, NAHOKU.com. Mahalo to our friends Nohoku for helping listeners celebrate the holidays with beauty, artistry, and the enduring spirit of aloha. Well, we'll talk some Hawaii Bowl. We'll talk some college football playoff. We will even maybe hear a little a cappella from Wes Reynolds. He'll join us next. It is the VSIN College Football Betting Podcast. Keep it rolling here on the VSIN College Football Betting Podcast, joined as always on Wednesdays by the one and only Indiana alum, Wes Reynolds, who once again, smiling ear to ear. He's like Mr. Grinch over there in a good way. You know, they have that big smile that just keeps going all the way up to the ears. Let me ask you a question regarding the first playoff game, which we're going to dive into. As an Indiana fan and a gentleman who will be in attendance at the Rose Bowl on New Year's Day to watch your beloved Hoosiers, do you have a preference on opponent, Oklahoma or Alabama?
Tim, before I get to that, I do have to acknowledge the events of this weekend and bring us in with song. There was something in the air that night, the stars so bright. Fernando, the great Abatoon Fernando, as Fernando Mendoza becomes the first Indiana University Heisman winner, even though he's been called, is he the worst Heisman winner of all time? Well, that's like being the, you know, the worst looking playmate at the Playboy party.
Oh, stop. Yeah. Hey,
you need to wrap
your arms around it. He's a Heisman Trophy winner, you know. And, you know, bleep all them voters. You know, Diego Pavia could go bleep himself. Like, come on, man. What are we doing? That's ridiculous.
It did remind me there was a certain sports business reporter when Indianapolis hosted the Super Bowl, of course, many years ago, and said, this is the worst Playboy party at the Super Bowl ever. Rhymes with Scovell is how we'll refer to that as. It was like, are you kidding me? Yeah, all that debate about Fernando, it's like, yeah, he didn't have the Joe Burrow numbers. Like, okay, he's the Heisman winner.
Look, Joe Burrow, like, you know, Joe Burrow's maybe the greatest college football player ever. Like, his numbers were so outrageous. And, you know, it's the year that you win it, man. Like, you know, look, for Jeremiah Love, his numbers weren't eye-popping to win the Doak Walker Award, but he was the best running back in college football this year. So it's just sometimes you hit the right time, and I have no issues with Fernando Mendoza winning the Heisman Trophy. You know, it's another year too, Wes, where you think about Heisman betting preseason and, you know, looking for those long shots. I looked for a couple long shots. I came up empty with Devin Dampier and Damon Williams, but, you know, Fernando Mendoza around 55 to 1, I believe, was, you know, his preseason number. Diego Pavia was way out there. Jeremiah Love. I mean, three of the four guys that were actually the top three, Wes, who finished 1, 2, 3 in the Heisman, were all long shots to win this award. So it's another year where we've seen that you can get some really big numbers on the Heisman Trophy winner.
Yeah, no question about it. And I wish I would have had more faith, because I talked it up all summer. I'm like, I think this guy's going to be really good. And then didn't bet it until it was like 3-1. You know, it's a winner, but it's not the big tickets. So those of you that had more faith, and that's why I got to get over my IU fan PTSD. It's like, we're not that program anymore. I mean, we're on 60 Minutes, for God's sakes, on Sunday night. You know, being profiled, as I'm waiting for the stories, and I felt so bad about it, by the way, because these are like serious stories, right? On 60 Minutes, like how Germany is arming itself in light of what's happening in Ukraine, like, you know, how to stop, you know, disease and all these important stories that I'm following. It's like, get to Indiana. And I felt like such a heel, because like, this is important world news. And I'm like, get to Indiana football. Who cares? Hey.
Kirk Cignetti is important world news right now.
And, yes.
You know, I'll say this for anyone who did bet Fernando Mendoza. Those days of getting an Indiana quarterback at 50+1 is probably going to be numbered. Now that Cignetti is there, man, this might be the last year.
We're already speculating, man, in the transfer portal. It's like, are you going to get Drew Mestemaker? Are you going to get Sam Leavitt? Or, you know, who are you going to get? It's probably not going to be our former quarterback, Brendan Sorsby, since his girlfriend apparently committed to play volleyball at Texas Tech. So Red Raiders might have the inside track.
All right, so let's get back to the initial question. We'll get into Oklahoma, Alabama. I know it does feel like, I'm sure our listeners are like, man, we've talked about these games forever. It's going to be nice to get those quarterfinal matchups, to get a little bit of new material for us to talk about. But before we break down Alabama, Oklahoma again, your thoughts on that game. Is there a matchup you think is better for the Hoosiers in the Rose Bowl?
You know, I've been going back and forth with that, Tim, because I've been asked that, and I'm like, you know, it's a coin flippy game, right?
Yeah.
And the line really hadn't moved off one. You know, you've had people that have made cases for both Oklahoma and Alabama. Both of these defenses are obviously very good. Oklahoma top 10, Alabama about top 15. So not much of a difference there, and that's why you see the low total of 40.5. Alabama, I thought, outplayed Oklahoma in the first matchup, but Oklahoma got the turnovers, and that's why they won the game, despite the fact getting out-yarded by a massively huge margin. The less explosive offense is Oklahoma, so that would be a little bit, I think, easier for the Indiana defense. But Alabama's got some injuries on the offensive side of the ball. You know, Simpson's going to go, but, you know, how much is he 100%? So that's something you certainly have to look at. But I don't know if I have a preference, Tim, and I don't think Indiana does either. I think, you know, Kurt Cignetti and his guys are like, we're going to be ready whoever it is. So I don't think that there's a preference. There's obviously the storyline with Kalen DeBoer being the former Indiana offensive coordinator under Tom Allen. So there's obviously that. But I don't really have a preference, to be honest with you. I've been going back and forth on this game. I don't know if you've bet it. I have not as of yet. I'll probably have some kind of small play on game day, whether it's like a first half or, you know, first quarter or something, just for some interest. But I don't have a lot of conviction on either side here.
Yeah, it's funny because I talked about this on Monday with Adam. You know, one of my first bets was Alabama at a pick, Wes. And now as the week has gone on, or the 2 weeks have gone on, I'm like, do I still like that play? I've heard some good points on the other side. You know, the injuries, they are concerning, right? And I know Ryan Grubb, the offensive coordinator for Alabama, said everyone's good to go. Jam Miller's out there. Josh Quabus is out there, the tight end, Ty Simpson, et cetera. But what is he going to say, right? He's going to, yeah, we're hurt. We're screwed.
Yeah.
We're not healthy, you know, going into this game. So, you know, I look at this Oklahoma team. You mentioned it, and it's been brought up a lot, right? The Alabama game that they won 23-21, they had just, you know, 200-some-odd yards in that contest. Alabama 406. You know, what's interesting about Oklahoma this year, and you look at some of their games, Wes, they were outgained by 194 yards against Bama, outgained by 105 yards by Tennessee, outgained by 72 yards by Ole Miss, outgained by 44 yards for Texas. We know this offense struggles, but I think the question for me is going to be, what do we get from John Mateer? Is John Mateer, with these 3 weeks off, is he going to look a little bit more like what we saw in September? And also, Wes, knowing that this is a playoff game, and we look at this, you know, from a handicapping standpoint, I would say in the NFL, especially with a guy like Mahomes, in the playoffs, do we see Mateer take off and run more? And I'll pull up what those numbers are here in just a moment. But, you know, what do you expect to see from this Oklahoma offense that has really struggled throughout the entire year, even though they went out and brought in a pretty sharp offensive coordinator in Ben Arbuckle?
Yeah, when they brought in Arbuckle, obviously, who was with Mateer at Washington State, we kind of thought, okay, this is going to be up-tempo and, you know, chuck and duck and get it down the field. And it really hasn't been. You know, their games have been absolute grinders really, really all year long. So, That's the old question. Like, how much is Mateer's running ability going to be, you know, a factor here, because he has not, I don't think, been 100% ever since he's returned, but he has had some time off. And, you know, they didn't they didn't have to play that SEC championship game, much like Alabama did. So, look, when you're in the 8-9 game, you obviously you can't save anything right. necessarily for the next opponent. It's like you got to do what you can to advance. So this isn't, oh, God, we don't want to show this on film. So, you know, Oklahoma, I think, has the ability to kind of, you know, run those trick plays and whatnot. And they may have to rely on that a little bit, even though I don't think this Alabama defense, which is still very good, I don't think they're dominant necessarily, though, at the line of scrimmage. If you really go inside the numbers, they're a little bit better against the pass than they are the run. They're giving up 125.6, and that's certainly above national average. But that tells you that they don't shut you down at the line of scrimmage like Oklahoma does. Oklahoma only gives up 81 yards a game, but Alabama has not been great running the ball either. So in the trenches, you would think advantage Sooners here.
So I went and looked it up. So at FanDuel right now, over under on Mateer rushing yards is 34.5. Now, many of you know this, but if you're new to the program, new to betting player props in college football, sacks go against your rushing total. So if you look back to the Michigan game where he was fully healthy, he rushed for 74 yards in that game. The Temple game, he rushed for 63 yards. The Auburn game is where he got hurt and he rushed for 29. After that, 5-14-17 against Tennessee, ran for 80. Against Missouri, he ran for 60. It's a bit of a risk because, once again, if he gets sacked a couple of times, it's really going to hit the rushing total. So maybe you find a market where longest rush, something like that. But I could certainly, in a playoff game, Wes, knowing the struggles Oklahoma has had offensively, I could see Mateer utilizing his legs a decent amount, and that might be an angle I look to bet, is John Mateer over his rushing yards on Friday night.
I like it. I think that that's probably a way to go, because I'm having struggles getting involved in this game because I have no idea. And plus the fact that, you know, with the fandom, with Indiana, like who we're going to get. But, it's tough for me to really find an advantage either way. If those of you that have conviction, obviously bet your conviction. But, man, if you don't have one, it's okay to pass.
No, and that's the tricky part, right? You know, this time of year, these games are so high profile. We're going to sit down on Friday night. You know, it's funny. I got asked this question. I do a radio show every week in Memphis, and the co-host down there, Jeffrey Wright, who both he and I love college football. It's our favorite sport to watch, to bet. And he said, you know, is the playoff not hitting as hard as it has in the past? I said, well, it's tricky to ask a Notre Dame fan because I'm still a little bit bitter.
Yeah, it hit you in the lower region, shall we say.
Yeah, but I'll say this. Comes Friday night, man, and the lights are going to be on in Oklahoma. It's going to be electric. That atmosphere is going to be top notch, and I'm going to be all in. So I'm very much looking forward to it. And look, the game that when we saw the bracket come out, on, you know, a couple Sundays ago, outside of the disdain that I had for the actual bracket, the game that intrigues me the most in the first round is on Saturday, and that's Miami taking on Texas A&M. And, you know, I bet a little bit on the under. I was happy to see that market move a little bit in my favor this week. That's down to 48.5. We gave it out on the podcast last Thursday at 51.5. So, hey, closing line value, yippee. but what do you make of Miami and Texas A&M? Last thought real quickly, and I talked about it on Wednesday. I think the X factor could be, and my worry is, as someone who has taken a little slice of Alabama, is the kicking game. Tate Sendell is awesome, 7-for-7 on 50-plus yard field goals, and Alabama has really struggled in the kicking game this year. And a game with a total of 40.5, a spread of 1.5, that certainly concerns me. But Wes, looking ahead to noon on Saturday, Miami, A&M, as mentioned, the total has now come down to 48.5. Spread still sitting at 3.5. What do you make of this one, and can you trust Carson Beck in a hostile environment on Saturday?
I'm also on the under at 51, and that came crashing down like this morning, by the way, as we do this on a Wednesday. So, Yeah, everybody kind of has the same idea that maybe this is going to be a slower tempo game, that you're going to see two teams that are deliberate. You have two top 20 national defenses here. Miami a little bit closer to the top 10 than A&M is. But I think on the Miami side offensively, what is their strength? It's the offensive line. So they're going to run the ball. It's not that necessarily I don't think they trust Carson Beck, but I think they trust that running game a little bit more than they trust the passing game. And so you're going to see them run, I think. And plus the fact that Texas A&M, pretty good pass rush on defense. I think they were like number one in sack rate on passing downs and first nationally on third down defense. So Miami's going to want to try to stay ahead of the chains as much as they can and run the ball. And it's like, okay, we'll take 4 yards a clip. We'll take, you know, we'll get to third and two or third and one, third and short, think that we can convert those first downs. And on the A&M side, what's Miami's strength? Probably their pass rush, I think, more than that. So you're going to probably see a lot of zone read where Marcel Reed, I think, is carrying the ball. And I think you're going to have two teams that are a little bit more run heavy against two good defenses. And that's why I think that you're going to see a slow tempo. I think in terms of the spread, one of the reasons why you haven't seen it move, even though there's some very smart people that do like Miami, like if there's a dark horse outside the top five seeds, I would say, because I think the top five, all of them can win the national championship, and I'm not sure that the other seven can. But if there's a dark horse, there are some people pointing to Miami. You haven't seen a ton of movement in that number because there's always the worry about Mario Cristobal's game management. Even though his coordinators have been top-notch this year, Shannon Dawson on offense, Corey Heatherman, who they got from Minnesota last year on defense, does he let the coordinators do their work and kind of stay out of the way? And there's always that concern with Mario Cristobal, and that's why I think that you haven't seen maybe a ton of movement in the market. You'll certainly get it, I think, the day before on game day on Saturday.
Yeah, and like I said, happy to see that the total is moving in our direction here, but I think this is, you know, if you haven't gotten involved yet on that total, you know, you missed out on the good number. I still think first half under is not a bad look, Wes. 24.5 still out there in the market. I think this could be a kind of a feeling out process. Does Mario Cristobal and Miami play it a little bit more closer to the vest in this particular game? But yeah, big movement to the under, which I think makes sense. Casey Concepcion and Malachi Toney, electric players. Those are guys that I can't wait to see, and hopefully they get the ball in their hands a bunch. Concepcion as a punt returner, Toney. Does Toney throw the ball? That could be the fun prop here, because he was a high school quarterback. We've seen him, you know, have a couple of trick plays as well so far this year. So very much looking forward to that game at noon on Saturday. All right, let's get to the two games with the G5 teams involved. We'll go in chronological order. We've got Ole Miss and Tulane. We saw this already. Tulane went down to Ole Miss, and Ole Miss dominated, but obviously the elephant in the room is the elephant that won't be there, which is Lane Kiffin. He will not be on the sidelines for Ole Miss. They're around a 17.5 point favorite. If you do like the favorites, Circa and the Westgate Superbook still have 17. If you like the dog, plenty of 17.5s out there. I have not bet this game, so I have bets on three of these games. I have not bet this game yet, and I'm curious your thoughts on Tulane and Ole Miss. Part of me thinks, Wes, this is a, you know, you know, we joked about Diego Pavia, bleep them voters. Well, this kind of feels like a, you know, bleep Lane Kiffin type of moment. Do they try to flex a bit in this game to say, hey, we're fine, we don't need Lane Kiffin? And there is part of me, Wes, that is hoping that is the case, because I would love to get a little bit suppressed price on Ole Miss when they play Georgia in the quarterfinals.
Yeah, I think you have two motivated teams here for very different reasons. Obviously, Tulane, they're losing their coach. John Sumrall is going to go to Florida, but still with them for this game. And both these G5 teams are going to be motivated, because we've seen all the thought pieces and all the video clips on the social, like, man, I don't really like Cinderella. Like we shouldn't have these teams in the playoff, and you know they don't belong here. And maybe it's going to prove to be that kind of like it did last year. So I think Tulane is going to be motivated. But you mentioned it, Tim, with Ole Miss. this is going to be the most supportive crowd that they could possibly get yeah. there in Oxford at Vaught-Hemingway Stadium. Like, they're going to be, you know, fever pitched to, like, you know what? This guy abandoned us. This guy left for a conference rival, and you know, we kind of rebuilt his career here at Ole Miss, really, where we gave him a chance when a lot of these other schools in the Southeastern Conference weren't wont to do that. And now all of a sudden he's the belle of the ball and he's going to LSU and he abandons us. There's some of his assistants, by the way, Charlie Weiss Jr., of course, the offensive coordinator, a couple position coaches that are coming back to Ole Miss that are obviously with them for the prep for this game. I think Ole Miss starts out very well here. I really do. And I laid a little 9.5 for the first half on this one. I have not laid full game yet. I think 17 is about right because I haven't laid full game, Tim, because what does concern me at the end is if this game is in hand and you've got the Sugar Bowl in New Orleans on New Year's night on deck against Georgia. How deliberate does Ole Miss get? Are they really wanting to, like, kick the crap out of Tulane if they can and really hang a number on them? And I don't know if they're going to be willing to do that. It's like maybe discretion is the better part of valor. Let's say they're up close to the number and there's 6 minutes left. Let's get Chambliss out of the game. You know, let's get some of the starters out of the game and save them for New Orleans. We got the game in hand. We've proved our point. So I think where you're going to see maybe Ole Miss get a little bit of the margin is in the first half. And I think that they're going to come out fired up. And I don't see this going really any differently for Tulane, even though I did bet them in the American title game. Tulane has just kind of been what Tulane is. You know, I don't think that they've really gotten any better since they got the drubbing against Ole Miss. I think they beat the teams that they were supposed to beat necessarily. And you know, good record, good season, but I think Ole Miss going to get some margin early in the first half and then maybe put it on cruise control. So there might be a spot where Tulane signs up for 60, as they say, and, you know, could get a backdoor where you get like plus 24 or something live. And that might be the spot to jump in on Tulane. But I think first half Ole Miss at least is up by double digits at the half.
Shout out to SVP and Stanford Steve. Yes. Sign up for 60. 548 to 282, the yardage discrepancy back in September when these two teams met. You know, it's funny, as people have bet, and, you know, as time goes on and you start to hear more thoughts, it reminds me a little bit. You and I love college basketball, and I love betting college basketball because it's so quick, right? You bet a game, the lines come out that night, and then, you know, the game is played. It reminds me a little bit of March Madness because the lines come out on Sunday, everyone's got their thoughts, and then by the time the game rolls around, you're like, God, I hate this play. So I wouldn't say I'm there yet here on Oregon, James Madison, but I laid it with Oregon, right? I laid 21 with Oregon, even said 21 was fine. The more I look at this game, I get a little bit worried. And I don't know if it's just because it's been a week that has gone on, but I think the point you made regarding Ole Miss is a fair one. You know, at the end of this game, is Oregon looking to just kind of milk the clock and get out of there with a 17-point win and get ready for Texas Tech, which is going to be an absolute war? Or does Dan Lanning try to prove a point that the last time we were seen in the college football playoff, we were getting embarrassed by Ohio State? So there's part of me, Wes, with the travel and everything involved, that really likes Oregon here. I did lay the chalk with Oregon, but, you know, look, James Madison, this is what they want to do. They are third in the country in average time of possession. They want to run the football. They average around 280 yards per game on the ground. And we've seen some teams, and you saw Oregon up close and personal, we've seen some teams have some success running the football. So I'm curious your thoughts on the nightcap of the first round, Oregon hosting James Madison.
Yeah, this is a tough one for me, too, and I have not bet this as well. I certainly don't disagree with your case for Oregon. Maybe at this number, it'd be a small lean to the dog for me, but not with a lot of conviction. Even though James Madison plus 230 yards per game better than their opponents this year, not the Ducks. But you got to consider the competition. Mm-hmm. Like, they steamrolled everybody in the Sun Belt. I think they had one game that was decided by one score in conference play. but against teams, you know, a little bit above their weight. And I would include, of course, Louisville in that, even though that was a little bit of a deceiving score.
Yeah, they led by in that
two
game.
Losing by two touchdowns, had a couple bad breaks, couple, you know, just bad bounces of the ball on turnovers. And then against Washington State, though, they couldn't get away against Washington State. Now, Wazoo, pretty underrated defense. So that's what concerns me a little bit for James Madison. Bob Chesney, of course, is going to be here, and the staff, even though Chesney is going to be moving on to UCLA. And James Madison, like, I don't know if they're going to be overwhelmed by the moment here necessarily, Tim, even though this is the first playoff appearance. Because this program, of course, you know, that came from FCS and into the Sun Belt, they're kind of used to winning games at James Madison, right? Now, Oregon is obviously a different level of test, but they won under Kurt Cignetti. They've continued it under Chesney. Like, they built a real program there at James Madison that Billy Napier is going to take over. And I think Sun Belt Billy, now back in the Sun Belt, I think he's going to do a good job at James Madison. And they're just going to keep this going and plug and chug. But, you know, this is a step up in class, so that's why I haven't necessarily jumped in on the dog, at least as of yet. You know, Oregon is kind of that team that I see a lot of people picking, like, okay, you know, watch out for the Ducks here. Watch out for the Ducks. Like, not a lot of them picking Indiana. You're going to have your usual suspects pick Ohio State, right? And you're going to have your usual suspects that go with the SEC team, and that being Georgia. And I think Georgia, by the way, is the only SEC team that has a chance to win the whole thing in Miami when it's all said and done. But a lot of people like in Oregon. And this was a team I was a little down on coming into the season. So I got egg on my face. I was wrong. I thought they were going to have 10 wins or less. So I like the under 10.5, and they have won 11 as of now. And they have kind of turned it up to a different level ever since the Indiana loss. Like, they've been beating solid teams pretty easily. They beat USC pretty easily, I thought. They beat Washington very easily, a lot more easier than I thought. So it's kind of a tough train to get in front of. So as of now, I'm staying out of this one.
Yeah, the 21s are back. So, yeah, I would still look at it that way. I don't love Alonzo Barnett from a passing standpoint, the quarterback of James Madison. And if they're able to take away Wayne Knight, who's a very good running back, not to be confused with the
With Newman.
but Wayne Knight, over 1,200 yards rushing. If Oregon's able to take that away, they have the number one pass defense in the country. Oregon does. So I actually like this matchup, you know, just from I'm curious to see how it plays out. I think the point that you made about James Madison not being, you know, scared of the moment, I think is a fair one. I mean, this is a program that's used to winning, even with different coaches, right? They've won FCS national titles. They did not skip a beat jumping to the FBS. So not their fault that the ACC is a bunch of dopes and had the tiebreakers the way that they did. By the letter of the law, they deserve to be here, and we'll see if that plays out on Saturday night. I think both these teams actually go in with a chip on their shoulder because you've had some horrific takes regarding, you know, G5 programs and all of that. But I thought Brad Powers, who actually will be on the show tomorrow, made a good point about the G5 right now. And it wasn't disparaging, but it is what it is. I mean, Indiana, a reason they were so successful right away, Wes, is because they had a lot of G5 players from James Madison. But you're not seeing the elite G5 teams anymore because all those players are getting poached, right?
Yeah.
So the depth isn't there. James Madison's a very good football team. Don't get me wrong. And, you know, can they compete? It's possible. But I think if Oregon is ready to go and Dan Lanning kind of has the bully role, I think that's fair. Last thing I'll say on this game, you know, you mentioned coaching. Bob Chesney, of course, moving to UCLA. It's also worth noting that both the coordinators for Oregon have head coaching jobs waiting. Will Stein heading to Kentucky, their offensive coordinator, and Tosh Lupoi is headed to Cal to be their head coach. So a little bit of multi-hats going on there. Is that worrisome at all? So we'll see how this thing plays out. I did lay it with Oregon, and you know me. I think this will be the biggest favorite I have laid all year in college football. So what could possibly go wrong?
Exactly. Exactly. Everybody's got a plan until some team messes up or we get punched in the mouth, right?
So let's have some bowl games here. We'll go through the bowl games of December 22nd through the 26th, And I will pull my Kirk Herbstreit here. Well, I'm on the call of this game. I will not be making a pick. But the famous Idaho Potato Bowl on the Smurf Turf up in Boise, we've got Utah State and Washington State. Washington State also lost their head coach. He is moving on. Jimmy Rogers going to Iowa State. Actually liked the move to get Kirby Moore, the offensive coordinator from Missouri. But Washington State, not many opt-outs. Utah State, not many opt-outs. Actually really liked the quarterback battle we have in this game with Eckhaus for Washington State, Bryson Barnes for Utah State. We've seen a little bit of love come back into the market on Wazoo this week. This was 3.5. It's now under a key of 3. What do you make of the famous Idaho Potato Bowl on Monday?
I played under 51.5, and that's where the market has gone. I think there might still be a couple of 51s out there, and it can always move. Look, these numbers are going to move back and forth as opt-outs get announced late, but it doesn't appear to be many here. Washington State, really good defense this year. I mentioned it against James Madison, where James Madison did get the win, but I think Washington State, you know, kept them in the low 20s. And you look at the defense against the against really good competition, by the way, because they played that as a PAC expatriate. They played that kind of independent schedule. Aside from North Texas and Washington, which was very early in the season, they went to Ole Miss and held them to 24. They only lost 22-20 at UVA. They held Toledo, which is usually a good offense, even though they're slower tempo this year, to 7. So this is a good defense in Washington State. And Bronco, I think, wants to run the ball and, you know, manage the game, control the clock a little bit. So I thought that this was a recipe for an under. Anything 51 or better, I thought was good, even though it's mostly 50.5 right now. Small lean to the dog, have not bet the side, but I did bet the total.
Yeah, Utah State playing some good football down the stretch, right? They were toe-to-toe with Boise State in that regular season finale in Logan, lost in overtime, should have beaten UNLV. So they really, I thought, played their best football in the final couple weeks of the season. And Bryson Barnes, super senior, he's going to wrap it up. He's going to put it on the line, man. That's the pig farmer. Looking forward to being on the sidelines for that one. Just fingers crossed. Apparently, it might be raining, so not looking forward to being on the sidelines in the elements there in Boise, Idaho. Let's go to Tuesday, the Boca Raton Bowl, and another situation where we don't have a coach. Jason Candle has moved on from Toledo to go to UConn. Don't like that hire for UConn, but that's for a discussion in the offseason. And then you've got Louisville, and you always wonder about a team like Louisville, who at one point in time, Wes, thought they could win the ACC. And now you're playing in the Boca Raton Bowl before Christmas. So you're starting to see a little bit of Toledo love come into the betting market. I understand it. This one is kind of the old school motivational thought. Like, does Louisville really want to be playing in this game at 2:00 in the afternoon on December 23rd against Toledo?
Yeah, I took 7 here with the Rockets, actually a little bit better, and would still take the 7s out there that are available. You mentioned about you didn't like that Jason Candle hire for UConn. There's some other people that I don't think didn't like Jason Candle either, and that was his team. Apparently, from everything I've read, that they were like, yeah, well, we're cool, like we're good, that he's moving on, and it's going to be the interim for this. It's going to be the quarterback coach, Robert Wiener, is, I believe, going to be the interim here. You've had a couple opt-outs on both sides. I know Toledo's got a safety that is already committed to the Senior Bowl. So maybe McNeil Warren, by the way, he may not play. Louisville's got a couple defensive linemen that have already opted out. Now, Miller Moss, the quarterback, apparently is going to play. Chris Bell, the receiver, their top receiver, is going to miss with injury. They've had a lot of running back injuries, too. A lot of injuries in the backfield for Louisville. So I think Toledo, you know, motivated team, that G5 team that gets to play an ACC team.
Yep.
You probably got some kids in the Midwest or in that upper South area, like in Kentucky and Tennessee, that maybe end up at Toledo, that would have liked to have played at a Louisville, or would have liked to have played at a Big Ten school, or in a Power Four conference, but didn't work out that way. So I think maybe Toledo with the motivation edge here, and I think, you know, kind of winning one for the for the new coach. It's going to be Mike Jacobs is going to be the new coach. So the quarterback coach is the interim. I think Toledo is going to be a little bit feisty here against Louisville. So anything a touchdown or better, I like the Rockets.
Also on that Wednesday, we've got the New Orleans Bowl, Western Kentucky and Southern Miss. This will be a 5:30 kickoff at the Superdome. And stop me if you heard me this before. Southern Miss, their coach left. Charles Huff moving on to Memphis. Blake Anderson, former Utah State coach, he will take over on a full-time role. So, you know, playing for the new coach, maybe it helps alleviate the loss, if you will. Southern Miss was a team that many people this offseason came on this podcast. I bet it as well. They went way over their win total. Kind of limped to the finish line, though. And they got Western Kentucky here. Hilltoppers, we'll call it around a 5.5-point favorite in this one on Tuesday.
Yeah, and Anderson used to the Sun Belt, of course, was at Arkansas State previously. So I think he'll probably get it done down there in Hattiesburg. And I look at this, I couldn't really make an argument for a side. It doesn't appear like there's a lot of opt-outs really on either side. I'm trying to check that. You got to do that about every single day.
Of course.
I think probably the over would be the way I go. I have not bet this game as of yet, but Western Kentucky likes to throw the ball. Even with McIver being injured, Rodney Tisdale, who can run a little bit, but can also throw, they've been, I think, just fine without him. You've got Braylon Braxton, looks like he's going to go for Southern Miss in the Superdome indoors. I think this probably a shootout. We usually get shootouts in them New Orleans Bowls down there in the Superdome. I think we got another one here.
Frisco Bowl will wrap up the 23rd. I was surprised why the market didn't really move, but now it is moving, and I think it was waiting to see the news regarding the quarterback for UNLV. Anthony Calandria announced he will be back next year, which is massive for Dan Mullen. Dan Mullen not going anywhere. Jet Thomas also coming back, so UNLV's going to be a pretty loaded up bunch. The last time we saw them, they were losing in the Mountain West Championship game. And then you've got the situation where they're playing Ohio, and then there was the oddity of Ohio placing their coach, Brian Smith, on leave on December 1st. Well, on Wednesday, we found out he is done. He has been fired with cause for engaging in, quote, serious professional misconduct and participating in activities that reflect unfavorably on the university. So I laid 4 with UNLV early on. I thought they would be pretty motivated for this game. I've been impressed by the way that they've played. This will be indoors at the Ford, at the Star facility down there in Frisco. So I like UNLV here under a touchdown. I still think it's playable if you want to find a dance partner in a money line parlay. If you want to throw like UNLV with Army or something like that, I wouldn't be opposed to that. But I like UNLV here. I laid 4 and probably would still lay anything under a touchdown.
Yeah, that would be the only way I would go here. By the way, John Hauser, the DC, is going to be the interim for this game for the Bobcats. Would lean maybe a little bit over here, too, because you don't bet many unders in UNLV games this year. If you've been betting overs, you've been doing very well, I think, by and large. So I could only see a shootout here. We check the weather, obviously, so you don't want to get too pot committed on that. But it would be Rebels or nothing here against Ohio.
All right. I'm going to make Wes Reynolds sing Christmas songs here, maybe a Mele Kalikimaka, because Christmas Eve, a tradition unlike any other, the Hawaii Bowl, and it is great to have the Bows back in it. As you know, we have been pro Bow the whole time. We were out there for their week 0 win. We just had Timmy Chang on the podcast. But this is going to be a fun one, man. You've got Nick Rolovich. He is staying on the staff, but he will be coaching on an interim basis for this game. So he stepped in the interim role for Justin Wilcox. They win their regular season finale, Cal did. And then you have Jaron Kiawe Sangapulateli, the Hawaii native, went to Campbell High School, who just won the state championship out there. He's sticking around for another year. So these rosters are pretty much well intact. Jackson Harris will be out for Hawaii. He's hit the transfer portal, but there's a belief, Wes, that, you know, his production will be missed, but they think they can fill the holes with Nick Senecal, who's been dealing with some injuries this year. This week, we started to see some Hawaii money come into the market. I took 3.5 at open. Still probably would lean Hawaii if you are able on Christmas Eve. I know a lot of people have things going on. If you are able to bet this live, probably a very good live trading game, would lean maybe over in this one. But this is going to be a fun one. Christmas Eve, Hawaii taking on Cal. A lot of Hawaiian connections in this one.
Yeah, absolutely. With Rolovich coming back, I would try to do my best Don Ho with Mele Kalikimake here. But it's Hawaii's way to sing Merry Christmas to you. By the way, Hawaii in the bowls when they're at home, 13-0 against the number in their last 13 lined home games. For Hawaii. So they really get up for these teams that are in the Power Four, which Cal is, of course, in the ACC, longtime Pac-12. Probably a lot of recruiting overlap, too, because Cal gets a couple guys from the islands to come to Berkeley. You have Rolovich coming back. I missed the number here. I think you're on the right track, though, Tim, on the Rainbows, Rainbow Warriors, whatever they're called now. But nevertheless, Hawaii playing at home. And I just didn't think Cal should have been that kind of, that big of a favorite really here. Cause like, what is that going to be? That was more one of the more surprising firings, I think, getting rid of Justin Wilcox, who, yeah, you know, had he at a certain level, run the ball, defensive coach, little bit conservative with the game plan, but he had Cal at a decent level, but they elected to make a change, and it's going to be that Oregon defensive coordinator taking over, Tosh. So I think you're on the right track with Hawaii. I have not bet this, though, as of yet. It might be. I think this is that the only sporting event on Christmas Eve, by the way?
Oh, yeah.
So it's Hawaii, maybe a Ross Christmas Story before that on one of the Turner channels. And then watch the Hawaii Bowl, because that's all we got on December 24th. But should be a good one, at least. Should be very competitive.
The way that Hawaii likes to have it, the week zero game, the late night games, and now the Christmas Eve special by themselves. Kansei Matsuzawa, by the way, the secret weapon, the Tokyo Toe, the first ever
nickname.
Consensus All-American in program history, Wes. Did not win the Groza Award. He was a Groza Award finalist, but you've seen the kicks. You've felt the injury, or the energy, excuse me, no injury. Let's not speak that into existence. Now it's time to wear it with the official Tokyo Toe gear inspired by the Lou Groza Award finalist Kansei Matsuzawa. From bold tees to clean hoodies, every piece brings that same focus and drive Kansei shows on the field. Show your pride, show your passion. Head on over to TokyoToe.com. That's TokyoToe.com. Gear up and own the moment. Tokyo Toe. Yes, that is a elite nickname. And if you haven't heard the story by now, he learned how to kick via YouTube living in Japan. And by the way, the episode last week, we had Timmy Chang on and talked a little bit about Kansei Matsuzawa, how they recruited him and how it all came together. But what a cool story for him. And maybe a secret weapon for this game. We'll see if the kicking comes into play for the Rainbow Warriors on Christmas Eve.
Yeah, absolutely. So looking forward to that. By the way, one correction, 13-0 just overall against the number in the last 13 home games for Hawaii.
26-1 ATS under Timmy Chang at home. He has absolutely thrived there. All right, three more bowl games to hit on before we let you run, Wes. Wes will be back next week before he departs to go to beautiful Pasadena. We will talk some more bowl games then. But let's hit the three games on the 26th. And, you know, you can go as long or as short as you want on these ones. Let's go to Ford Field. I forget the sponsor in this one, but it will be.
I believe it's called the Sports Bowl. Sports Bowl!
Central Michigan and Northwestern, the Purple Cats lay in double digits against the Chippewas.
Yeah, probably justified. I have not done anything with this game. Some of these games I'm waiting for to see if we have any opt-outs. What I'm really waiting on the Northwestern side is what's the health at the running back position for these guys. Komolafe missed the finale. Joseph Hyman left with an injury. I know David Braun said that he would
be confident on one or two being back, because remember they lost Cam Porter earlier in the season. So they're a little bit banged up there. Central Michigan, look, doesn't really do a lot offensively. They're very much a slow it down, like to use that running quarterback and slow the game. That's why you see such a low total. Nothing as of yet for me here in the Sports Bowl at Ford Field.
Game above Sports Bowl. That is your sponsor in this game. 1 o'clock Eastern, the day after Christmas. This used to be the Guaranteed Rate Bowl. It's just the Rate Bowl now. Chase Field down in Phoenix, New Mexico and Minnesota. I think you and I are on the same side on this one. I took New Mexico at open. Got three or three and a half. This is now a 2.5. Obviously, PJ Fleck historically has been very strong in bowl games. I do love the fact that you've got a G5 team playing a P4 team. I was worried a little bit, Wes, that New Mexico would just get the New Mexico Bowl, and that would be kind of an uninspiring way to finish the season. I'm glad they got an opportunity to play in a bigger bowl, if you will, in Phoenix. They get to travel a little bit. They get to play a Power Four team in Minnesota here. So I played New Mexico on open. Let's see if we get back to three, but I still would lean New Mexico here in this spot and probably put a little bit on the money line here. Curious if Darius Taylor, Minnesota's stud running back, if he will play in this game.
That's, I think, the speculative reason why you and I and many others hopped on the New Mexico train, not only the motivation angle, but is Taylor going to go? PJ Fleck, 6-0 in bowl games at Minnesota. He did kind of play some more young guys later in the season. PJ, it's well speculated that he's, always put himself out there for bigger jobs. So you always, kind of like, okay, what's the motivation going to be? And then Minnesota always wins bowl games. But I think Jason Eck, I think that they are going to be excited, even though it's a short trip to Phoenix from Albuquerque. I think that they're going to be excited to go somewhere. And, this isn't like Hawaii where it's like, okay, why would you want to leave? Okay, we'll play at home and in Honolulu. But I think New Mexico probably wants to travel and not have to play in their home stadium for a bowl game. So motivation edge. And then plus, I wonder what the Minnesota injury situation. So I took above three. And I think it may get to three, by the way, if Taylor obviously is announced that he's not opting out, you're going to see 3 and 3.5. And even then, I would still like the Lobos.
All right, we'll wrap up on this Friday, the 26th. We've got the First Responders Bowl down at SMU Stadium, the Gerald Ford Stadium, UTSA against FIU. We'll call it 8.5. There's some 9.5s out there. There's an 8 in out there. It's kind of that no man's land between touchdown and 10 here. The Roadrunners taking on FIU in this spot on the 26th.
Yeah, you talk about an up and down team this year, UTSA, you never know what you're going to get with this team. This is a team that destroyed East Carolina, destroyed Tulane at home, but also has some real head-scratching losses when you look over the Roadrunner season. Of course, they got boat raced by South Florida. Everybody has gotten, most teams got boat raced by them. But they lost at Temple. They lost to Texas State. They covered against A&M. So they've been so erratic. So this is tough for me to support UTSA. By the way, Jenkins, the quarterback, did come back for FIU. It was Pisanski that was starting a couple games. So small lean maybe to FIU here. Willie Simmons got them back in a bowl game for the first time in several years. I want to say it's 2017, 2018, the last time FIU's been in a bowl game. So I think they're probably excited to be here. So small lean to FIU, but not a bet at this time.
All right. Wes Reynolds will be back with us talking quarterfinals, talking Rose Bowl. We'll do that after Christmas. We'll talk some bowl games with him before he heads to lovely Pasadena to see his Indiana Hoosiers take on either Oklahoma or Alabama. Wes, always appreciate it, sir, and Merry Christmas. We'll talk to you after Christmas.
Same to you and yours, Tim.
All right, that's going to do it for our podcast. Thanks again to Wes Reynolds at Wes Reynolds 1. You can always follow me on Twitter. I'm at 1 Tim Murray. Thanks to our producer, Rick. thanks to Ryan Hunter as well. Wyatt Tomchek out and about calling UNLV women's basketball. He will be back in tow come Thursday. But once again, that Thursday episode will have a double shot of handicappers. Matt Eumanns and Brad Powers will join me here on this podcast. But until later in the week, this has been the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.